Hi everyone, Mel Telesikan here. You're tuning into episode 37 and I wanted to say a big thank you because for the last 8 weeks on iTunes, we have been sitting in the number one position on the business news new and noteworthy section. And that's all because we've got people listening to the show like yourself. So thanks so much. Now, we've dropped out of the new and noteworthy category, which is a bit of a shame, but we're now into the wider realm of the what's hot category. So really can't complain there. Now, what I'm looking for though is some help from you, the listener. I'm really looking for some feedback. If you would like to share with me any ideas or any thoughts that you have around who I should be speaking with, what sort of questions you want answered. Maybe there's something that I'm not answering that you think, why doesn't she ask? So let me know. Make contact with me on Twitter. My handle is Mel Telesikan, MelTelesikan, or you can just search Customer Centric Coach. You'll find it there, or directly on my Facebook page, which is Customer Centric Coach. Thanks again for listening. Really grateful for all of you tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode with a man I know in real life. His name's Brad Beer. He's got a business in the health industry, but the principles that he's applying are really fantastic and could definitely be applied across industries. I know you'll enjoy what he has to say. Thanks again for listening.
You're listening to the Customer Centric Show with Mel Telesikan, where we talk with successful business owners and experts to share smart ways to attract more customers, profits, and freedom by thinking about customers first. Now, here's your host, Mel Telesikan.
Now it's episode number 37 and I'm really glad to have this guy with me today. His name is Brad Beer. He's the owner of Pogo Physio on the Gold Coast in Australia. Brad is a physiotherapist, speaker, health and wellness expert, and he's an Amazon best-selling author of the book called You Can Run Pain-Free, a physio's five-step guide to enjoying injury-free and faster running. Having delivered over 25,000 physio consults and working with top athletes and high-performing individuals, Brad delivers an exceptional service that we're going to be learning about in today's episode. He's a high-performing individual himself, he's a triathlete, and within days will be competing in the New York Marathon. Welcome to the show, Brad. Really great to have you here, especially considering you're in the lead-up to such a big run.
Thank you, Mel. It's great to be here.
Now, let's get started. We'll talk about the marathon a little bit later because I am keen to know a little bit more about that. But we always start the show by talking about examples of customer-centric businesses. What makes for a customer-centric business in your eyes, and what's your example?
Yeah, great question. This is something I'm deeply passionate and highly enthusiastic about. And I guess what makes a customer-centric business in my eyes as a consumer, Mel, is pretty basic, really. It's simply when, you know, the expectation you have isn't just met, it's over delivered upon. So you know, an example that I've experienced in the last, you know, calendar year and preceding that slightly was in Australia here, a brand incubator program, a business incubator program, which you and I are both familiar with, the Key Person of Influence program. And
yes,
you know, that to me is actually now my new benchmark of a customer-centric business, purely for the fact that what I thought I was getting was delivered upon, but there has been so much more than what I expected.
Right. Can you give us an example of one of those things or a couple of those examples, perhaps things that you didn't believe you would be getting from that program?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, ongoing, Mel, after the 40 weeks ended, I had no expectation of receiving ongoing support, and it's continuing to flow. Webinars, networking events, specific help calls, all sorts of different things, and that's just exceptional. And another example would be, you know, you'd attend part of the program and there'd be bonus sessions which you weren't aware of. There'd be bonus books and little gifts, sometimes very inexpensive things, but just these little wow moments which I know, you know, the key person of influence program term them, these little surprise and delight moments. And for me, it's really redefined customer service, and it's highlighted that it needs to be strategic. We can't just expect it or hope that it happens. It needs to be built in and structured and systematized for it to occur.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The program was very clear. That felt like it had great value. And then there's that ongoing, like you said, webinars and opportunities to put yourself forward and get that one-on-one, you know, extremely high level of feedback about what you're doing in your business. And it's high-level coaching beyond that initial 40 weeks.
Absolutely. It's just over and above.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, Brad, let's talk about your business and what it is that led you to a career in physiotherapy and what it is that brought you to then owning and starting Pogo.
Yeah, certainly, Mel, and I'll do my best to give you the abbreviated and the listeners, obviously, the abbreviated version. But my junior years going through school was spent trying to emulate an Australian triathlete called Brad Bevan. So Brad was a successful triathlete and from the age of 11. Do you remember Brad, Mel?
I know his name, but I'm definitely familiar with the name.
Well, in the 90s, he was a household name in Australia, and I grew up basically wanting to be the next Brad Bevan, and I had a name that was fairly close in Brad Beer.
Yes.
And fortunately, I found that I had some natural talents and giftings for endurance sports. So it was a parallel journey, I guess. But what occurred is my career pathway was very tunnel vision and focused on becoming a professional triathlete after finishing school. But I had a big bike crash in 1999, Mel, and some serious injuries after that. And off the back of that, I fell into a bit of a horrible period of my life, clinical depression, suicidal at times, before I started university, which was my physiotherapy degree. And the reason I went into physiotherapy was because I spent so much time at a physiotherapist through my junior triathlon years. And on one particular consult, I remember it well, my physiotherapist at the time, Suzanne, said to me, "You know what, you'd make a good physio one day." So I actually parked that thought. And years later, when my first choice of professional triathlon didn't eventuate, I jumped into university and took on the physiotherapy degree.
You know, when people aspire to do things like that, being an elite athlete, you know, I think of the same parallel being an actor or something that seems just almost unattainable because only such a small percentage of people get to that level or that level of success. And so when you've got so much commitment, you're talking about, you know, an athlete with commitment, lifestyle adjustments, everything is all about becoming that professional. It's enormously huge pressure for yourself, I guess, and to be able to then make that deviation must have been a really difficult process, be able to sort of go let go of it and move on to a career. So can you tell us a little bit about then what the commitment then was to become the physio? Like, what have you realised since you've been able to take on that carer role?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, looking back, Mel, you know, the days were quite dark when I was trying to, you know, find my next step in life. And I guess my mindset was, well, if I can't live this out myself, then I want to help others, whether they're aspiring to being a professional athlete or whether they're aspiring just to perform at their physical best. I want to be able to help others do that. And so physiotherapy was a really neat fit. But in terms of that journey, I guess there were times when I was frustrated at university, without doubt. But it was a 5-year course. It was a double degree, so it was very long and taxing. It was massive hours, 30 hours every week, you know, contact hours plus studying on top and working jobs around that to support myself through uni.
Yes.
So it was a long journey, but one that quickly after graduation I sunk my teeth into what was the beginnings of Pogo Physio.
And so what made you decide then to work for yourself as opposed to work for somebody else?
Yeah, certainly. I graduated with a job already lined up. I'd been very proactive as a student, so I'd, you know, sought out opportunities everywhere it was possible. And the job that I managed to get was, in my mind as a physiotherapy graduate, my dream job. I thought, this is it. I was working alongside an Olympic physiotherapist who at that time was looking after one of Australia's leading swimming Olympians, and I thought, this is just fantastic. I stepped into that job, Mel, and within 3 months of being in that role, I was very, very withdrawn, just unhappy. And what it was there was a partnership with the physiotherapist that I aspired to be like, who I joined that workplace to follow, and another partner, and they were chalk and cheese, and the atmosphere, the culture of the business was very low. It was very, you know, non-conducive to career progression, development, and
sure.
So it was not a good start to a working life professionally. And I actually thought, oh my gosh, I've studied all these years for what? What am I going to do now? And I had some friends, actually clients of my remedial massage business, which was one of the businesses I ran going through university. And they said, well, why don't you start your own? And that was the seeds of starting my own practice, Mel. That was just a few months after graduating, and that's pretty much unheard of in physiotherapy that a graduate would open their own practice.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I guess you had that spurring need to go and find your own there and get back into that sort of healthy environment, or create your own healthy work environment.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a real opportunity for no other reason than there was a view that I had going through university of how physiotherapy as a profession should be presented to the public. And it grieved me that that wasn't how it was being presented. So, you know, I was driven to elevate the standard, to deliver something of excellence, and to also bring in a bit of life and energy and, you know, and colour and feel, which, you know, have evolved over the last 9 years of business, Mel.
Good stuff. Now let's talk about who your clients are, please, Brad. I know you've got a bit of a niched market. Can you explain to us what it is, who you look after, and what it is then that separates you from other businesses similar to yours?
Yeah, certainly. Myself, I'm still a practicing physiotherapist, so I still run a caseload of anywhere from sort of 2 to 3 full days a week. And my clients personally are, you know, high performing athletes, ranging from that through to weekend warriors who are, you know, the one common thread they have, Mel, is they're all trying to get the best out of their physical performance. So they're really performers of some ink or kind. And whether that's rock stars, I've had the privilege of looking after a rock star or two, or whether that's someone on the Australian swimming team at the Olympics, professional triathletes, surf life-saving champions, through to, you know, your first-time 5-10-kilometer runner. So the one common thread is they're all performers. That's me personally, and obviously in any business, it's the speed of the leader is the speed of the team. So my team of physios tend to have the bulk of their caseload dealing with people who are also invested in getting their best physical performance as well.
Okay, excellent. So it's people actually know to come to you because they're trying to reach certain goals or milestones, you and your staff.
That's correct. You know, we've become really clear on this in the last sort of 12 to 18 months that, you know, we've done a lot of work behind the scenes on identifying, you know, 8 characteristics of our ideal clients. And, you know, whilst everyone that walks through the door or that we service or look after or do have a relationship with may not be the client, we've found that by being able to, you know, identify with it, know it, certainly, you know, you start to see a lot more of that sort of clientele inside the business.
So my next question is around how you are particularly customer-centric or client-centric with your people. You mentioned that you're looking after athletes, but why do they come to you and why don't they go to somebody else who specialises? What do you think it is that keeps them coming back?
Great question, Mel. And this is, you know, there's many ways I could answer this, but if I try and boil it down to, I guess, the most important factor or feature would be that it comes back in our industry to results. And I don't think this is too dissimilar to any industry. Results for our clients are why they engage us. And so we've built and are continuing to build systems and processes that do everything we can, Mel, to shore up a client's result. And what's interesting is that in our industry, physiotherapy, health services, professional services, the only way we can deliver a result or hopefully go above and beyond that result is to be crystal clear on what it is that they're trying to get done. And we've sort of termed this the client's finish line. So as a practice, as a team of physiotherapists, we're very prudent to be crystal clear on what the client's finish line is. For some people, it's simply getting out of pain, Mel, after an injury. For others, it's going beyond that and taking out insurance so the injury doesn't come back and going into performance or best performance. So once we're clear on that, Mel, we will move heaven and earth to see that that's the outcome that they get.
Okay, so when you mentioned before creating systems and processes, I imagine every client is going to have different needs. So how do those systems and processes still manage to be tailored for individuals? What does that look like?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I guess we can't systematize or put systems around the clinical care itself, Mel. Yep. So that's always, as you say, going to be individualized for the person and the condition. But what we can systematize is everything else around that. So making sure the clients, you know, get everything from follow-up care calls to appointment reminders, just at a very simple level, mm-hmm. through to a sequence of welcome emails that, you know, explain how we do things, that explain about our results, free or guarantee, that explain that this will only work if there's clear communication between both parties. So, you know, these are examples of some of the systems we've built in the background to the clinical care that happens.
Okay, so, yeah, so you're actually establishing clear parameters on what you require from your clients to make sure that you can all achieve that finish line you're talking about.
Mel, absolutely. It's critical. And if I've observed in my industry one hinge, it's been as an industry, we haven't been good on identifying the client's finish line.
Yep.
And we haven't been clear as an industry on clarifying expectations. And there's another level to that as well, Mel, and that would be, you know, I often talk about businesses that treat the external problems of a client do okay, but businesses that treat the internal problems of a client do very well. And so we're very particular, Mel, to scratch beneath the surface of that rolled ankle or that sore Achilles tendon or that sore knee and actually find out and ask the question of the client, you know, how's this making you feel? And once their emotions, you know, become apparent, then at that point there's a new level of connectivity between us as the practitioner and the client in the, you know, in the consult room.
Okay. Well, then my next question then is around staff, because you obviously, as you said, got a caseload 2 to 3 full-time days. Then you've got your other staff who are delivering that style of service for you. And I often ask people on the show how they manage to replicate, maybe not themselves, but the exact type of service and atmosphere that you're trying to create yourself and being able to mirror that in your people. How do you do that, or do you do that?
Yeah, great, Mel. I mean, it's absolutely critical for a business to grow that, you know, that there is, as you say, it's not a, you know, mini me version running around. We've got a team of, you know, 12 to 13 full-time team members at Pogo, and, you know, 4 of those administration-based or front desk-based, and mm-hmm. the rest are clinicians, physiotherapists, the remedial massage therapists, podiatrists, and exercise physiologists. So what I've found is one, being clear on, you know, the core values of the business or organization. We have 3. Being clear on what's expected, so it comes back to expectations of the team, and mm-hmm. And what the non-negotiables are in terms of customer service. So, and we have a culture, I think, that keeps the glue that keeps this clarity together, Mel, is regular communication, and that's for us in the form of 2 1-hour weekly team meetings that are compulsory for everyone to attend. And these aren't sit around and navel gaze meetings. These are typically wrestling things to the ground, creating some conflict
So can you tell me, was that 2 1-hour meetings a week? Is that what you said?
Yep, 2 1-hour meetings, one on a Tuesday, one on a Friday, Mel, for all the team.
Wow, okay. Is that, that's not the norm I wouldn't expect for a physio business, even of your size, or is it?
Mel, no, it definitely isn't, and I'm not sure because I haven't stepped out of physiotherapy as an industry, but I doubt whether it's the norm in many organisations.
Yeah, I would think so, because it seems like a lot, but you obviously, what are you doing on a Tuesday, Friday? Tell us more.
Yeah, no, certainly. Tuesday is what we call a tactical team meeting, Mel.
Yes.
So everyone around the room, we're talking, generally we're starting the meeting by celebrating good news stories, so sharing stories of our clients' successes, which helps to instill why we're there as an organisation. Then we go on to, you know, talking about feedback scores, anything that's come up from our clients. We do net promoter scores for everyone after their initial visit. We share those around a room, and then we go around the room and we talk about what each of the team members is trying to get done that given week, and if there's anything that's bugging them and they've got permission to speak about anything, and we tackle that stuff to the ground. So it's about moving the ball forwards on that tactical stuff. And then on Friday, we call that the Pogo Academy, Mel. Pogo Academy, and it's a program for a year where it's actually training and development. So as an example, this Friday we'll be sharing around the founder of Ritz-Carlton Hotel, his customer service principles. So it's a combination of, you know, materials we view or read, listen to, and lessons that I've prepared and some of the team will also prepare. So it's more of a training and development session.
Oh, okay. And so you mentioned that other staff members can sometimes facilitate these training sessions.
Absolutely. I never want to be the only one speaking.
Yeah. No, that's great, because obviously that's encouraging other people to be, you know, taking leadership or learning more about that role or collaborative facilitation of new learning. That sounds great. Ritz-Carlton. So
yes.
Hotel principles, luxury hotel principles, and applying them. Okay. Good stuff. One of the other guests actually talked about Ritz-Carlton, and definitely fascinating stuff. They really do deliver. I love that. 2 hours a week. You know, my first thought when you said 2 hours, whoa, that's a lot. That's expensive. But essentially what you're doing is you're actually improving the business and making sure that you've got that continuous custom because you are delivering by the sounds of things.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, it's expensive. It's payroll that adds up. But for me, Mel, it's, you know, I'm grieved even to this day if we drop the ball on the basics of customer service. So irrespective of the result, physiotherapy-wise, we're engaged to deliver it. Mm. It still breaks my heart if I see someone not acknowledged quickly enough at the front desk as they walk in, or,
yes,
you know, these little things. It's just about human, you know, human dignity.
Yeah.
And so I actually count that as a great responsibility. It's also a great joy when we get it right, because it's nothing like putting a smile and hearing a bit of laughter in, you know, in a business.
Mm. Did that come out of necessity, Brad? Did you realise that you needed more time with your people to try to share this, or what made you decide that 2 hours was what you needed, or even, you know, some people might say 1 hour a week is too much. What started it? Was it underperformance? Was it not being able to greet at the door like you mentioned?
Yeah, I think it was more of the latter there, Mel. It was, you know, we're a very innovative practice. It's in our DNA, and we're always looking to improve and, you know, take that next step. And so, I mean, I could do with more time a week in training and developing and innovating different things with the team. So we've always run with 1 hour, but it's in the last 2 years we've gone to 2 1-hour sessions a week. It works well, and I couldn't do without it.
Oh, it sounds great. What's the feedback from staff?
Yeah, Mel, they're clear on what we're there to get done, and so they appreciate it. And it's just it's a education that, you know, obviously as the leader of the organization, the business, you need to educate the team on what it is that, you know, why we're doing this. Comes back to the why behind the what, I've observed the ones that don't quite grasp it initially, they often step in to be the ones that really get in and drive the ball forwards. And, you know, there's a great book I read years ago by Patrick Lencioni. He's one of my favorite, you know, voices and communicators. And the book's Death by Meeting. And, you know, it talks about the only meeting worthwhile having is the one that involves conflict. Because when there's conflict, there's an ending that we're all, you know, aspiring to see. It's like watching a movie. And so, you know, he makes a parallel of a good meeting being like a movie. You know, there's a bit of conflict, but then there's a nice resolution at the end.
And maybe a bit of passion too, that people are really invested in what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly right.
You mentioned just before the NPS, the Net Promoter Score. You use that in your business. You mentioned that. Do you use that every time you have a consult, or do you do it when people are at their finish line stage? When do you ask your clients for feedback?
Yeah, Mel, good question. At the moment, it's after the first appointment and then once they reach their finish line. However, in the new year, we're actually looking forward to pushing play on a digital version.
Yep.
Where we'll be able to track them at more regular intervals throughout their time with us.
Okay, great. So at that initial appointment, is that when you start mapping out a plan for them to see what their finish line is, or how far down the line is it that you actually map that out?
Great question. We call our initial appointment, Mel, a discover recover session.
Yes.
It's 60 minutes in duration, and it's not the norm for our industry. It's longer than most initial appointments in our industry. However, we look at anyone that walks in our doors, and we'll have anywhere from 100 to 200 new faces through our doors a month.
Wow.
And we look at them as, we want to build long-term meaningful relationships with these clients. So we feel it's absolutely necessary to that first contact point, that they feel heard, they feel well understood. You know, they leave with confidence in our assessment and our diagnosis, and we go deep into what it is that they're trying to get done. And so as a result, yes, we map out, okay, well, Mel, you're here to get out of pain, or you're here to go into best performance. And we document it. We outline our expectations of them and what we'll deliver in return. And it just sets the scene for a good, conducive, working relationship.
Sounds good. Now, you said you got quite a few new faces walking through the door. Would I be right in assuming they're recommendations, referrals from other previous clients?
Yeah, Mel, certainly. It's still the largest source of new clientele for our practice, Mel, is word of mouth referrals. And so that's, that's just such a, for any business, it's the best compliment, obviously, we can get. And then there's many other ways. We're active with marketing across many different dimensions. So let's talk
about that, because I like to know how people are doing it, especially in a practice or in a business like yours. There are quite a few rules around how you market yourself, I believe. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yeah, spot on, Mel. There's APRA, which is the registration body for health professionals at large, have some very stringent, criteria on what's allowed and what is not allowed. And as a result, yeah, you need to be aware of those. And we've had a couple of, notices over the years, because we are always trying to push the envelope. Obviously, they're quickly addressed and, no harm's caused.
Yes.
But I'm always one to err on the side of, let's try something new, let's take new ground, rather than sit in the quagmire of mediocrity, which is not a fun place to be, in my mind.
Yeah. So how do you do it then? Where are you marketing yourself? Are you doing local publications, online? You're doing it everywhere. Can you give us some insight into that?
Yeah, certainly. We do a lot digitally, Mel. So we do retargeting campaigns, which is always nice when, even I jump on my computer, on my wife's computer, and I'm on YouTube, and there our little ads pop up. That's quite a hoot.
Yeah, your own brand. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there we are on YouTube. So that's something that's working well for brand awareness for us at the moment. Facebook advertising, Facebook campaigns, obviously across all the social platforms, Mel. Google AdWords is a big part, and SEO strategy for organic search. And then we run a program which is pioneering in its sense. It's called an athlete ambassador program, in pioneering for the physiotherapy space, maybe not for other sectors, but that's where we take some up-and-coming aspiring athletes every 6 months, Mel, and we put them in a high-performance environment of different workshops and accessibility, and we subsidize some of their treatment costs as well, to help them get to that next level in performance. And in return, they're active ambassadors for us, wearing our shirts, tagging us in on social media posts. So that's something that's been a really cool thing to be part of in the last, year or two.
Right, okay. And do you do that with those individuals, or is that with a partnership?
That's with them individually, Mel. So okay. Some of these are, you know, junior swimmers. Some are, you know, recognisable household names in sports like surf lifesaving.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's just good fun. And, you know, we hope that they would refer us and recommend us, even if there wasn't an agreement in place. But it's just obviously the, you know, it outlines what's expected on both parties and unmet expectations. You only cause a disappointment, and so we don't want disappointments when it comes to our key relationships.
It sounds like it's a win-win. They get the support, they get the physiotherapy, where perhaps, you know, if they're not sponsored athletes, that they still get that support without the expense, because a lot of people who are in that space often talk about how hard it is for them to be able to focus on their sport because they still need to pay bills and, you know, and recovering and physiotherapy is part of that process. So it sounds like a real win-win situation.
Yeah, it is, Mel. It really is.
Ah, very clever. I like all these ideas. They're quite nifty. So, all right, let's talk a little bit more about getting your new customers. You talked about referrals. You talk about marketing. What do you think is your biggest onboarding of new customers? Would it be recommendations?
Yeah, definitely, Mel. It's recommendations. And one thing I didn't mention is we have a strong network built up over years of, you know, delivering good results of referring general practitioners, GPs, and also, orthopedic and neurological specialists. So, you know, so that's a big influx of, new clients as well. But certainly, you know, we jump up and down and get excited about, you know, a word of mouth referral. And we also get very excited about return clients. There's nothing quite like seeing someone 3 years after their last episode of, you know, whatever it may have been. I've had clients return after 6 years from interstate, and it's, you know, it makes me stop and pause and think, wow, well, what was it about, you know, this might have been 6 years ago in the business's infancy where systems weren't developed and processes weren't refined and things didn't look as pretty. And I sit back and think, well, what was it that was the glue in that relationship? They haven't been in for 6 years. They've moved away. They've come back, whatever it may be. And it comes back to the name of your show, Mel, and it's the fact that we've got a high value and place a high importance on customer service and making what we call the customer the hero. Yeah. It's all about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you're getting together, talking to your staff in what could potentially be in your environment isolating for your staff members, constantly just working with individuals. The day finishes, you're gone. It's a chance for everyone to come together and share their questions, share their wins, and then to talk about the positive outcomes that come out of all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now let's talk about attracting more customers. If you're in a health professional business, what do you think, if you might not find yourself in this position, but if you right now needed to find yourself some brand new customers or new clients, where would you be focusing?
Yeah, Mel, I released a book in March this year, 2015, and it's been amazing to observe the pull power of being published. So, yes. You know, ask me now and I will answer this way. If I asked me 12 months ago, I might have had a different answer. But I guest post on multiple blogs and different things relevant to our industry. And I would say I'd produce, I mean, we have a YouTube channel where we put up a lot of content. And I'd say, Mel, I'd be producing and putting out there good quality content. I had a gentleman just last week drive 3.5 hours to see me in the consultation room from the north side of Noosa on the Sunshine Coast of Australia to the Gold Coast to specifically seek me out for a 60-minute appointment around a running-related injury because he'd seen an article that was published of mine in a running magazine. So, you know, I'd say forget spending dollars and start to unpack some of that, you know, that IP that I guess every service provider, every business probably hasn't yet fully realized.
Yeah, sharing that information and willingly and openly and for free, and yeah, it will come back to you absolutely down the line. That's increasingly a popular option, and it's increasingly an area where people are finding great value, and just means so much easier. The business comes to them so much easier because they're giving away what they believe would be protected information, but it really just puts them in good stead for people who are looking for what they have to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a side benefit that a lot of people don't think about when they're sitting down to create content is if there was no commercial gain out of it at all, there's still a big win in that it helps people to refine their thinking and their frameworks. And, you know, I know once I sat down to write my book, my confidence levels soared because I realized that, you know, there was something that was tangible, that was of great value. And obviously I was already aware of that at some level, but this refining your thoughts is an invaluable process in and of itself through publishing.
Yeah, actually, I'm in the process myself, Brad, and I'd have to absolutely agree. It's getting it down and making sure that you're really clear on it, and then you go, yeah, there is quite a lot to this. And I guess when you share it with others, and as you have, you know, people have read it, they've given you amazing feedback. It's a bestseller, and people are realizing the value of it. So. Yeah. Let's talk about freedom in your business. You're working a 2 to 3 day caseload. Are you working these other days on your business, or what makes up the rest of your working week?
Yeah, thanks, Mel. At the moment, the other 2 days are definitely days working on the business. But, you know, there's also the flexibility. My wife, she's also in healthcare. She's a holistic doctor, and she's got a fair bit going on at the moment. An example, I guess, of the flexibility those 2 days out of the practice affords me is that, you know, I was with my little 2.5-year-old girl more or less the bulk of today while my wife was in Sydney with some work-related matters. And so there's certainly flexibility there, but we're putting in a lot of innovation at the moment. So, you know, there's the extra hours required. But I didn't really appreciate the flexibility that owning a business could afford the owner until my little girl arrived, and you know, I didn't need to check in with a boss or an employer to ask if it's okay to take time off here and there. So it's funny, Mel. You know, for many years I saw running a business as a real burden, and you know, obviously there's the endless pressures and things associated with it, but I really now appreciate it for what it is in a vehicle of being able to, you know, quickly, you know, fairly fluidly you know, change things around within a week.
Yeah. So when you did have your little girl and you realized, I guess there's obviously the opportunity that you know that it's coming, but were there any particular measures that you had to put into place to make sure that you could be present at that time, especially when you do have a child and you need to take probably more than 2 days off? Would you give any sort of insight into what people could do to make sure that they can allow themselves that freedom? Where would you start?
Yeah, I think, Mel,
Well, can you remember? Because if anything like me, it was sleepless nights, and maybe it's too a little bit too hard to recollect.
Yeah, oh, I mean, it's the first year is a pressure cooker, but I think leading up to it, I think if someone was trying to cram everything into 9 months of getting their business to a point where they could sort of step back, then it would be a big ask. But I really just think it comes back to clarity around purpose for a business, and therefore the people you attract and retain, and the quality of people that you've got.
Mm.
Simple things like we've spoken about, a focus on, you know, just giving people the human basics in terms of customer service, and obviously going beyond that where possible. And when those values and that DNA is in the blood of a business, then, you know, it does allow the business owner to step away and, you know, and for it to keep running. But by no means am I alluding to the fact that I'm hands off. At this stage, I feel in many ways more hands-on than ever, but I'm also more excited about my business than ever also. So,
yeah, now you have got some things coming up that you're working on. Do you have anything that you can share with us today that you're really excited about?
Yeah, no, certainly, Mel. In just over 8 weeks, we will go live, Mel, with what's been 2 years of development on a fairly groundbreaking way of delivering physiotherapy. So we're launching our 2-week fast track out of pain program and our 12-week into performance program. So, these are, you know, very unique, and we anticipate going to be a whole lot of fun, and also is going to lift the percentage of results as a practice we deliver. So we will still offer 1-to-1 consulting and, you know, that line of care, which is the norm for our industry.
Mm-hmm.
However, we see that we operate at sort of 30 to 50% results guarantee at the moment. By that, I mean 30 to 50% of people through our doors will report back to us that they got everything plus some that they came to get. The other 50%, even with all our systems and measures, are often people that thought they wanted to go to the next step but you know, when the pressures of life and everything else came with busyness and commitment levels, you know, they decided to not go there. So even though they've left our doors or our practice satisfied, happy, more than that in many cases, they still didn't actually tick the box of what they wanted to when they first sat with us in the consulting room. So we're looking at this as an exciting opportunity to really bring a model that gives an incredible percentage of results. So also brings some accountability and most importantly brings a set finish line, Mel, that the client knows is coming up, the therapist knows is coming up. And I make the analogy when I train our guys and, you know, and I talk to my patients myself, it's what happens when you see a finish line, when you're running a race or you're out there competing or any area of life, you've got a deadline for your book, Mel. When that finish line's set, the energy soars, there's a new level of commitment and, you know, the result is achieved. When there's no finish line or deadline, there's just too much, you know, risk of, you know, things just dying out and dying a slow death. So we're really excited about that, Mel.
Okay. And so you've got the, is it a 12-week cap on it, is it? So you're setting a 12-week goal.
Yeah, this is for people that will be entering an event. So we're looking at creating some cool experiences where we'll only take them onto the into our performance program if they've registered for an event. So whether that's their first obstacle race like a grit, True Grit or a Spartan race or whether it's running a 10K road race or doing a triathlon.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So this is going to be a whole lot of fun, and it's certainly in my DNA with you know, my background. And so, yeah, real point of difference for our industry.
I love it. So people are already committed. They've paid their money to do their Tough Mudder or whatever else they're going to do. And so this is about preparing them to make sure that they can be at their optimal by the time they start the race.
Yep, because there's a finish line. An example was the gentleman that drove south to see me from Noosa, and I said to this gentleman, Tony, Tony, I will see you again if you enter that half marathon that you just told me about as your goal for 2016. So his homework is to go enter it, send me verification he's entered, and we'll go to the next step.
Oh, fantastic. So everyone's got to do that, show you evidence that they've paid their funds, they're committed in that way, and then you can up your percentages of success and help them along the way.
Absolutely.
I love it. Now, before you finish, it's only a few days away from you going to New York for the New York Marathon. Have you done it before?
Mel, nope. This would be my first New York Marathon. In fact, my first international marathon. So treading into unknown waters.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'd be heading into cool weather, is it? Pretty cool there now?
Yeah, I got a weather report today actually from my dad, and he said it'll be about 12 or 14 degrees on the day of the race, which, you know, is I think it's much cooler in New York at 12 or 14 degrees that it is on the east coast of Australia.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, and are you heading over yourself? Are you going with a group?
Well, Mel, I've got a few other commitments over there around my book and different things. But my dad's actually coming over, which will my wife and little girl are staying here. It's a fair way for them to travel.
Sure.
There and back, short time frame. So yeah, my dad's coming over and I'll be running in my pogo singlet, Mel, or pogo shirt or pogo thermal.
Ah, fantastic. Well, we'll have to look out for you on social media, which then takes us to, can you tell us where we can follow you? Hopefully we can all follow you and you can share with us how you've gone and in your preparation for the event. What's your Facebook page, social media accounts?
Yeah, certainly. Probably the easiest thing, Mel, is, you know, I'm very easily locatable. As Brad Beer Physio on Google, that'll give everything. But my handles for Twitter and Instagram are the same. It's just simply my name, Brad_Beer, with obviously at in front. So at Brad_Beer, Mel.
Brad_Beer. Excellent. Well, best of luck with the marathon. Enjoy your trip to New York with your dad. Has he been a marathon runner in his time?
Mel, my dad's had a swimming background, so no, I don't think he's ever run a race in his life. He's done plenty of swimming races, though.
Oh, but you're both good at endurance by the sound of it.
Yeah, I think it's there through the bloodline.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, well, look, Brad, best of luck, and thanks so much for your time today. We'll have to get in contact with you down the line. I want to hear more about your program after you've got some results. I'd love to be able to compare those success rates that you're talking about achieving in the coming months. So, yeah, we should definitely talk back again in 2016.
That sounds great. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mel, and all the best to your listeners.
Thanks so much, Brad. And just before you go, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, don't forget we're looking for feedback. What is it you want more of? What is it you want less of? Who do you think we should be speaking to? And what are those questions that you want answered? You can send it to mel@customercentriccoach.com, via Twitter @customercentriccoach or Mel Telesikan, and via the Facebook page, Customer Centric Coach. So don't be afraid. Don't think twice about it. I'd love to hear what you're wanting to know more of and who you want to hear it from. Thanks again for tuning in, and I look forward to bringing you more episodes very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Centric Show. For additional smart ways to attract more customers, profits, and freedom, head on over to the website www.customercentricshow.com.